Coffee, right here on VOA.
I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Tuesday is Election Day in the U.S., and the presidential race is shaping up to be extremely close, with potentially even tighter margins than Joe Biden's narrow win in 2020. Reuters correspondent Joseph Axe explains.
Polls are showing that this is likely to be one of the closest elections in U.S. history between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. There are seven states that are considered battlegrounds. Every single one of those states is essentially tied, according to the polls, with very small margins in one direction or the other. There are a lot of people who vote by mail. In a couple of the swing states, particularly Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, state law doesn't allow election officials to touch those votes until Election Day. Even in states like Arizona and Nevada, where workers are allowed to start processing and tabulating mail ballots before Election Day occurs, it still takes a really long time just because of the sheer volume. So a host of reasons are going to contribute to what's going to be a long time before we can actually say who won this election.
Reuters correspondent Joseph Axe. U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said Monday that officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, are greatly concerned about the partnership between North Korea and Russia.
You saw the secretary speak to the fact on Thursday that North Korea has deployed as many as 10,000 troops to Russia, and that we were concerned that they would move to the front lines to enter the fight against Ukraine. As the secretary said on Friday, that as many as 8,000 North Korean troops had made their way to Kursk. We now assess that as many as 10,000 have made their way to Kursk and could enter combat in the coming days.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has neither confirmed nor denied the North Korean troops' presence. This is VOA News. Israel's foreign ministry said Monday the country has officially notified the United Nations that it was canceling the agreement that regulated its relations with the main UN relief organization for Palestinian refugees, UNRWA. Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan has more.
UNRWA has been the main UN relief organization for Palestinian refugees since 1967, providing education and aid services to millions in the occupied West Bank and Gaza. But last month, the Israeli parliament passed legislation banning it from operating in Israel and stopping Israeli authorities from cooperating with the organization. Since the start of the war in October last year, Israel has maintained UNRWA has been deeply infiltrated by Hamas, accusing some of its staff of taking part in the October 7 attack on Israel. The UN said in August that nine UNRWA staff may have been involved in the Hamas attack and had been fired. Israel's legislation has alarmed some of its Western allies and the United Nations. They fear it will further worsen the already dire humanitarian situation in Gaza, where Israel has been fighting Hamas militants for over a year. The Israeli Foreign Ministry said activity by other international organizations would be expanded.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu on Monday ordered the release of 29 children facing the death penalty after being arraigned for allegedly participating in protests against the country's worst cost of living crisis in a generation. The children were arraigned Friday and have been in detention since August. Activists say they were illegally picked up and have been put through horrifying experiences. Their arraignment sparked outrage and renewed concerns about deteriorating human rights in Africa's most populous country. Indonesia's National Disaster Management Agency says that at least 10 people have died as a series of volcanic eruptions widens on the remote island of Flores. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The eruption at Mount Lewotobi Laki-Laki around midnight spewed thick brownish ash into the air, and hot ashes hit several villages, burning down houses. The volcano's lava blanketed nearby villages and towns with tons of volcanic debris and forced residents to flee. Some, however, weren't lucky enough to escape, and emergency services came to recover their bodies as relatives wept nearby. Authorities said at least 10,000 people in 10 nearby villages have been affected by the eruption. I'm Karen Chamas.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
it's Election Day in the United States.
In tight presidential races such as this year's, legal battles are expected. Most of them will be fought in swing states, analysts predict.
Israel stops cooperating with UNRWA.
Israel accuses some of the agency's staff of taking part in the October 7, 2023 attack, which sparked the current conflict. But UNRWA officials say Israel has provided scant evidence for those claims.
And Kyiv is under attack.
Each night during the past weekend, I spent in the bomb shelter with my family, just as 100,000 Kyiv citizens did. The sound of the approaching drones was heard from the living room of my apartment.
Today is Tuesday, November 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Americans are voting Tuesday to elect the new President of the United States. The race between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump is so tight, however, that their teams are on high alert for legal battles that might erupt, throwing even more controversy into the mix. VOA's Veronica Valderas Iglesias reports.
Earlier this year, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump told several media outlets that if the results of the November 5th presidential election are, quote, honest, fair, and free, he would accept them. Election officials are confident the voting process will be fair, secure, and transparent. But the former president has increasingly voiced concern about his opponents possibly committing fraud.
If we can keep that cheating down, because they're a bunch of cheats, if we can keep that cheating down, we're going to have a tremendous victory.
During an interview that aired last month on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, Vice President Kamala Harris told NBC News' anchor Hallie Jackson that her team will be ready to go if Trump loses and attempts to subvert the election.
We will deal with election night and the days after as they come, and we have the resources and the expertise and the focus on that as well.
The Republican National Committee has in place a so-called election integrity program in battleground states. Its lawyers have filed more than 100 lawsuits over perceived voting rules irregularities, but many have been shut down in court. Democrats have launched their own legal efforts, including suing to prevent potential delays in the certification of Georgia's state election results. In tight presidential races such as this year's, legal battles are expected. Most of them will be fought in swing states, analysts predict. Democracy analyst with the Bipartisan Policy Center, Michael Thorning, via Skype.
At the polling place, we often see contests over whether or not ballots are being handled properly. In the post-election day period, there are disputes about whether or not individual voters are actually eligible and whether their provisional ballots should be cast and counted.
Anyone who claims fraud, however, must present proof, legal experts warn. Former Pennsylvania judge Robert Gracie is a practicing attorney and member of the nonpartisan organization Keep Our Republic. He spoke via Skype.
Lawyers, be careful what you allege. Make sure that you can prove it. Otherwise, they may be subject to discipline, as we've seen growing out of the 2020 challenges.
Trump's former lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, for instance, was disbarred for spreading baseless claims that the 2020 election was stolen. The legal battles could delay the outcome of the presidential election. But if on Tuesday night the results are clearly in favor of one presidential nominee over another by some noteworthy margin, analysts say it will be much harder for the opposing party to contest those results. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
In other election news, countries aiming to undermine Tuesday's vote are being forced to create fake videos and other disinformation because they're unable to do what they really want, penetrate systems that could alter the actual tally of the vote. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden has that story.
As of late Monday, an estimated 77 million Americans had cast their votes in the U.S. presidential election. And so far,
So good.
I can say with great confidence that I do not believe that a technical hack of our elections in the way that it would materially impact the presidential election is possible.
U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Director Jen Easterly. Briefing reporters.
The election community has never been better prepared to deliver safe, secure, free, and fair elections.
And while there have been disruptions, including efforts to take down websites and even some attacks on ballot drop boxes, there are bigger concerns about what U.S. officials have described as a, quote, fire hose of disinformation, much of it engineered by Russia, Iran, and China. CISA Senior Advisor Kate Conley.
Our foreign adversaries will remain intent on trying to undermine American democracy and the American people's confidence in it.
U.S. officials expect those efforts, some likely aimed at inciting violence, to ramp up once the polls close. So far, U.S. officials say the only physical threats have been aimed at election officials, not at polling places, and that voters should feel safe and confident casting ballots in person. And there may be more reason for hope that some of the disinformation and influence efforts are falling flat.
What we're seeing is voters are turning out in record numbers, and they're getting the locations, the time, place, and manner of election correct. They're getting that from election officials.
Susanna Goodman with Common Cause, a nonpartisan watchdog and advocacy organization.
There is a lot of mis and disinformation swirling around, but I think they're avoiding taking the bait.
Meanwhile, groups representing state election officials are also urging voters not to panic, reminding them that with any election, little things can go wrong, from power outages to poll workers accidentally showing up late. They say there are backup plans in place and that Americans can be confident their votes will count. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
For many, the election could not come soon enough, whether it's disagreements with family members or the fear that if the wrong candidate wins, life would somehow change. Many Americans report feeling stress and anxiety related to the unusually heated presidential race. Christy Kelleburn of Reuters reports.
Feeling stressed about the election? You're not alone. An American Psychological Association poll taken earlier this year found that 65% of U.S. adults felt exhausted by politics, while 55% felt angry.
You hear so much on both sides nonstop, like it's the end of democracy.
Two different characters outlook on life. It's just a crazy world.
He is only focused on himself.
She's a low IQ individual.
This is therapist Laura Goldstein.
It's stress, it's anxiety, it's fear. It can sometimes be anger or outrage.
She says the election has increasingly come up during client sessions.
I think one of the other big things that we're seeing a lot of is people struggling to connect because it doesn't always feel safe to talk about. You don't know what environments are a safe environment to have political conversations or to discharge some of the stress.
Carrie Jarvie is a mental health counselor.
Yeah, if someone's experiencing stress leading up to this election cycle, it starts with reflecting on what is my level of media consumption? Has it reached the point where it's not helpful anymore?
He says people suffering from election anxiety should seek activities that decrease interaction from the media.
What are the things that make you feel like yourself?
Like surfing or going on a trail.
That's Christy Kilburn of Reuters reporting for us. And here are some more of the other stories we're following from around the world. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump made their final pitches to voters on Monday in the same part of Pennsylvania at roughly the same time. Focusing on the state's southeastern corner, Trump took the stage in Reading, about 30 miles from Allentown, where Harris held her own event about a half hour later. North Korea's Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of leader Kim Jong-un, said military drills by the United States, Japan, and South Korea justify North Korea's nuclear reinforcement. State media KCNA reported on Tuesday a North Korean intercontinental ballistic missile launched last week flew higher than any previous North Korean missile. One more person has been confirmed dead in Spain as thousands of rescuers pumped water from submerged buildings, churned through muddy streets, and cleared debris on Monday as Spain braced for more deaths from its worst flooding in decades. The toll stands at 218 dead, all but four in the eastern Valencia region, and it could spike in the coming days as an unknown number of people remain missing. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Turning now to the Middle East. Near universal concern and condemnation has followed the Israeli government's formal announcement to the United Nations that it would not cooperate with the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees after Israel's parliament cut ties last week. In Washington, at the UN, and on the ground, officials and residents are raising alarms over the disintegrating humanitarian situation. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
For residents of Gaza and the West Bank, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees is a lifeline amid more than a year of violence. On Monday, Israel notified the UN it was cutting that cord, severing ties with the agency and banning it from operating in Israel within the next 90 days. Israel accuses some of the agency's staff of taking part in the October 7, 2023 attack that sparked the current conflict. But UNRWA officials say Israel has provided scant evidence for those claims. Israel's government, through spokesman David Mentzer, on Monday defended Parliament's decision.
The State of Israel will continue to cooperate with humanitarian organizations, but not with organizations that promote terrorism against us.
The move drew near universal condemnation from the U.S. State Department, spokesman Matthew Miller.
We have serious concerns about the implications of it being fully implemented, as well as our concerns about the underlying humanitarian situation in Gaza even before Israel passed this legislation.
The UN agency's head, Philippe Lazzarini, bluntly called the move a total disaster. UNRWA is the main distributor of aid in the Gaza Strip.
Having UNRWA ending its activities within 3 months would also mean that more people will die in Gaza. There is absolutely no doubt about this.
Palestinian officials said Monday it would, quote, trigger a humanitarian crisis of unimaginable proportions. Farsan Shaheen is a senior official in the Palestinian Foreign Ministry.
This contradicts principles of the UN Charter. It violates Israel's obligations under international law and sets a dangerous precedent.
Analysts in Israel argue that there is more nuance to this argument, and that cutting off UNRWA does not mean cutting aid to Palestinians. Analyst Nimrod Gorn of the Middle East Institute spoke to VOA via Zoom from Jerusalem.
The intention of the Israeli government, as declared, is to empower different international organizations, initiatives, private sector, all kind of solutions that could eventually replace UNRWA.
Displaced Gaza residents paint a grim picture.
There are no crossings, and there is no food. Everything is expensive, extremely expensive, because of the merchants and because of the crossings. There is nothing in the country. We are unable to buy anything, neither sugar nor vegetables nor anything. The prices are unbelievable. We are unable to buy the necessities of life.
Far from this misery lies a major lever, as Americans head to the poll Tuesday to elect a president who will lead Washington's relationship with a tense Middle East. This is especially acute in the battleground state of Michigan, where election officials say they've seen a surge in early voting. Both presidential contenders targeted skeptical Arab Americans in Michigan with promises to end the conflict. But in Gaza, hope is thin on the ground. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Turning now to the war in Ukraine. Over the weekend, Russian forces conducted massive drone attacks on Kyiv, affecting 6 out of 10 districts in the capital city. VOA Kyiv correspondent Anna Chernikova was in a bomb shelter for much of the weekend and has this report.
Over the weekend, Russian forces conducted massive drone attacks on Kyiv, affecting 6 out of 10 districts in the capital. Russian drone attacks have intensified in the past weeks, targeting mainly residential areas and critical infrastructure. Each night during the past weekend, I spent in the bomb shelter with my family, just as 100,000 Kyiv citizens did. The sound of the approaching drones was heard from the living room of my apartment, and the explosions from the air defense were heard and seen from the window. The nights were sleepless and loud, with drone debris damaging residential buildings and civil facilities across the city. VOA talked to a couple of Kyiv citizens who shared their personal experiences. Nina is living in one of the districts of Kyiv that suffered the most from the attack. She says that massive drone attacks during the night are a new reality for Kyiv. In the early hours of Saturday, she woke up from a very loud sound of the approaching drone. It was so loud that she thought it was about to hit her apartment. She immediately ran to the shelter, falling down and injuring her leg. Her family spent the whole night in a corridor until the air raid alarm was over. Vlad said it was also very loud in his neighborhood, which is in the other part of the city. He and his wife also heard the sound of the approaching drones and various types of air defense systems. When the sound got too intense, they moved to the corridor to make sure the whole family was safe and their little daughter could keep sleeping in the safest area of the apartment. Luba, also a Kyiv citizen, is pregnant. She shared that could not get enough sleep for the past couple of months due to the constant drone attacks. She said recently drones have been flying very low to avoid Ukrainian air defense systems, and the risk for the residential buildings to get hit has increased. During the past weekend, she was in the shelter every night and still heard the explosions in the neighborhood. She said her friends from different districts of Kyiv experienced the same. Falling debris damaged the building of Kyiv's Institute of International Relations and Institute of Journalism, two of the leading educational institutions in the country. The strike damaged the student dormitory and other civilian facilities in the area, as well as a former motorcycle factory. Students arrived at the scene to help the emergency service clean up the area. All drones that targeted Kyiv over the weekend were shut down. At least two residents of the capital were reported injured. President Zelensky reported that for the past week, Russian forces attacked Ukraine with 900 aerial bombs and 500 drones. Heavy damage was reported in Kharkiv, Dnipro, Zaporizhia, Kryvyi Rih, Odessa, and Kyiv. Civilian facilities and critical infrastructure were the main targets. With the beginning of winter coming soon, Ukrainians expect intensified Russian attacks on the energy infrastructure and are preparing for electricity outages to last for 8 to 14 hours per day. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
The United Nations says some 135,000 people have been displaced from a state in eastern Sudan in a series of revenge attacks by the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Reuters' Sean Hogan reports.
Salwa Abdallah was recuperating from a caesarean section when soldiers burst into her home. They were from the Rapid Support Forces, one side in Sudan's 19-month-old war. They accused her of supporting their rivals, the Sudanese army and its allies, and threatened to kill her, her child and her mother, and rape her daughters.
I gave them the money I had. They asked me to give them my jewelry. I told them I will give them my jewelry. They told me, give us the jewelry while we go to another home and come back to you. Once they left to the neighbor's home, I took my daughters quickly, despite my C-section, and moved my mother, and we hid in the animal's enclosure.
The incident took place in Sudan's Al Ghazira last month. The eastern state has suffered a series of intense violent raids over the past 2 weeks, affecting, according to activists, at least 65 villages and towns. Having walked for days, Abdallah and her family are now at a camp in neighbouring Kassala state. They are among the 135,000 people the United Nations says have been displaced by this latest burst of violence. Al Ghazira had already been subject to a violent looting campaign by the RSF
since it took control last December. But the defection last month of its chief in the state unleashed a series of revenge attacks. The Wad Meddani Resistance Committee, a pro-democracy group, named 169 people killed since the violence began on October 20, though in a statement it said there were hundreds more. The worst incident was in Al Sareha, where the committee said 124 people were killed on October 25. Video verified by Reuters showed RSF soldiers lining up men. Many of them were elderly and some in blood-splattered clothes. The RSF has denied ordering the attacks and said they were the result of the army arming local communities. The war has unleashed a hunger crisis across Sudan, with both sides accused of hindering international aid. Back in Kassala State, Hashim Bashir sits in the bus that brought him here from his home in Al Gazira. His leg was amputated before the war began, but his disability didn't stop soldiers from throwing him out of his home.
They are very vicious. They do not have mercy for the old, women, men or children. They beat. If you survive their gunshots, they hit you on your head. If you survive this, they will beat you with a whip just like children, and they make you cry like children.
His niece, Faeja Mohammed, says soldiers beat her uncle and threw his wheelchair on top of him. She was also beaten, she says, including her earring being ripped from her ear.
That's Sean Hogan of Reuters reporting for us today. A court in Paris is hearing the case against eight people charged in relation with the killing of a schoolteacher named Samuel Paty 4 years ago, just days after he showed images of the Prophet Muhammad in a class about free speech. Alice Rizzo of Reuters has that story.
The trial began in France on Monday over the beheading of a teacher who showed his pupils caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad in a class on free speech. Eight people are accused of involvement in Samuel Paty's brutal murder outside his school near Paris in 2020. Among them is Brahim Chanina, who identified Paty on social media and wrongly accused a 47-year-old of disciplining his daughter for complaining about the class. Many Muslims consider any depiction of Muhammad to be blasphemous. Prosecutors accused Chanina of collaborating with Abdel Hakim Sefroui, who founded a hardline Islamist organization, to incite hatred towards the teacher. Both men are charged with association with a terrorist organization. This is Thibault de Montbrial, a lawyer for Samuel Paty's sister.
This trial will allow everyone to discover how individuals, in the name of purist Islam and through their public positions, made it possible to put a target on a French teacher. And made sure that, in a period of 10 days, this French teacher, due to an incident for which the person who denounced him did not even witness, will be beheaded.
An 18-year-old assailant of Chechen origin, Abdulak Anzorov, attacked and killed Paty days after the class. He was then shot dead by police. Two of Anzorov's associates are also on trial in Paris, alongside Chanina and Sefroui, accused of knowing of the plan and helping him buy weapons. Last year, a court found Chanina's daughter and five other adolescents guilty of criminal conspiracy. Chanina's daughter was not in fact in Paty's class when the caricatures were shown, and the court found her guilty of making false accusations and slanderous comments. The latest trial is due to run until December.
That's Reuters' Alice Rizzo reporting. And finally, some sad news from the music world. Quincy Jones, the legendary American composer, producer, and entertainment mogul, has died at the age of 91. Over a career that spanned more than 70 years, Jones worked with other musical legends such as Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, Michael Jackson, Count Basie, and Ray Charles. He achieved his biggest success with Michael Jackson, producing the singer's first solo album, Off the Wall, and the historic follow-up, Thriller, which became the best-selling album of all time. Among the numerous honors he's received were 28 Grammy Awards. And that's going to wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Carrick.